Hello, and welcome to our program, Reader's Digest, brought to you by Owl Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center in San Antonio. I'm John Fisher, and during the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from Reader's Digest here on Owl Radio. First, some life well lived. Here's Tara Parker Pope from the New York Times with life advice from a five-year-old in Reader's Digest. When Gwyneth Toadbush told her five-year-old son Clark that she was feeling anxious about a meeting, he knew he could help. "Mama, I am nervous all the time," he said. "I know what to do." What followed was a stream of uplifting advice through a five-year-old's filter. Gwyneth posted their exchange on Twitter, and it went viral. "Everybody is kind of coping with one kind of stress or another in a pandemic," says Gwyneth, who lives in northern Michigan. "I think it rang true with people. I said on Twitter that he's the only life coach I know that gets paid in goldfish crackers." Here is Clark's advice, followed by brief explanations from his mother, and there are seven here. Number one, you gotta say your affirmations in your mouth and your heart. Another mom on Twitter talked about saying affirmations with their kid before school. "We tried it. Sometimes I tell him, say it like you mean it." I guess he translated that. Number two, you say, "I am brave of this meeting. I am loved. I smell good." He knows you can be quote-unquote scared of something, so he talks about being quote-unquote brave of things. I love the grammatical construction. I've never corrected it because I like it better. I don't know where the quote-unquote "I smell good" came up, but I like it. I'm going to use it a lot. Number three, you gotta walk big. You gotta mean it, like Dolly on a dinosaur, because you got it. He really loves Dolly Parton's song, Coat of Many Colors. When kids are making fun of her in school, she still went in and was brave and talks to those kids. I don't know where the dinosaur thing came from. Number four, never put a skunk on a bus. I don't know what it has to do with being nervous. Number five, think about the donuts of your day. We used to go to this little record shop. There was a room in the back and a whole section of records for a dollar. I would take him down there with a dollar bill, and he came back with a Burl Ives record from the 50s. There's a song on there called the Donut Song. It goes, "Watch the donut, not the hole." After we listened to that song a lot, that became our thing. Every night in bed, he tells me about the donuts of the day. Number six, even if you cry a little, you can think about potato chips. When he's upset, sometimes I tell him to think about things he's looking forward to. Potato chips are high on his list. Finally, number seven, even if it's a yucky day, you can get a hug. There have been so many times when there's nothing I can do. I tell him, even if it's a bad day, when you get home, I'll hug you. Next in Reader's Digest, 10 feel-good stories about hero pets, amazing rescue tales, plus your true stories, about 10 of them all collected here from various authors. First off, Darby, pit bull fights off shark, yes, shark, to save his owner, from Bill Hangley Jr. in Reader's Digest. Everyone wanted a piece of the dog that got a piece of the shark. I got emails from people in Russia. One guy offered me €100. Another guy found me at work and offered me $575, quote-unquote, cash right now. I said, keep walking, buddy, James White says of the offers he got for his dog, Darby. It got to the point where I started saying, no, 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 that's not me. When White, a 43-year-old security agent from Rohnert Park, California, snagged the pit bull puppy in the year 2018, Darby was just another four-legged lug, young, friendly, playful, strong as an ox. Then, in the summer of 2019, came Darby's date with destiny. White was fishing in Northern California's Bodega Bay. He left Darby, then a year old and 100 pounds, to chill in the parked car, windows down, while he cast his line a few yards away. The fish weren't biting, White recalls, until suddenly they were. At first, White thought he had hooked a stingray, but as he reeled it in, he realized it was a 7-gill shark, about 6 feet long. not uncommon, but still dangerous. Their teeth are gnarly, White says. He brought it close and carefully unhooked it, expecting it to swim away. It didn't. The shark clamped down on his ankle. All of a sudden, there was blood everywhere, says White. He yelled for help, hoping the fishermen down the beach could hear, but they didn't seem to know what was going on. Fortunately, Darby did. He hurled himself out of the car and down the embankment toward the water. He ran right up to the shark and sank his teeth into its gills. That just made the shark bite down harder, White says. Darby backed off, then regrouped and latched on to the shark's tail. The shark released its grip, and White managed to push it into the shallow water where it swam off. The whole thing took less than a minute, White says, but it left plenty of damage. White was able to stop the bleeding and get to a hospital, where he learned that an artery was punctured and nearly severed. That would have been the end of it had Darby's story not gone viral. White was contacted by NBC News and CNN. That's when the countless cash offers started to come in. But the big dog was not for sale. He had another job to do. At the time of the attack, White lived with his parents, James Sr. and Pam. When White's mother passed in early 2022, Darby and James Sr. became inseparable. Being James Sr.'s best buddy has been Darby's greatest gift to the family. We were worried. Sometimes when one parent goes, the other could get really depressed. But I know that Darby's here, so I don't worry, says White. Today, White's shark bite is long-healed, but Darby, a.k.a. the house hippo, is a bigger hero than ever. All he wants is to be surrounded by his humans, says White. If my dad makes a hamburger, Darby gets a hamburger with a bun. That's his best day. He's got it made. Pit bulls have a bad reputation, but they'll give their life to save yours, White says. Someone could offer me $1 million for him, and I wouldn't take it. From Your True Stories, here's Kathleen Wanamaker of Fayetteville, North Carolina. One morning, my daughter's fiancé, Jeremy, grabbed breakfast from the freezer. Soon after, our dog Sally came to his side, whimpering and pacing until he followed her to the kitchen. She pawed and yelped at the freezer door, but she wasn't begging for food. Jeremy opened the freezer door and found our kitten, Punzi, lying cold and limp on the low metal shelf. Punzi must have gotten curious and snuck in while Jeremy's back was turned. Jeremy wrapped Punzi in a thick towel and held him against his chest until he warmed up and began moving. Good thing Sally was looking out for her little buddy. Another Your True Story here, this from Janine Connolly of Whitney, Nebraska, Lulu the Diva. Our beloved heifer Lulu was a total diva. She was a food hog and a troublemaker, but also a great asset because she was the lead cow when the herd moved pastures. Cows like to follow a leader, and Lulu liked to lead. One summer, a wildfire broke out. While evacuating, we could barely see through the smoke or hear over the roar of the flames. But we knew that if Lulu could hear us, she'd come. My husband could see Lulu looking around bewildered but trying to prevent a stampede. He ventured into the smoke to get her attention. A few minutes later, Lulu and my husband emerged, leading our bull and 25 heifers to a safe pasture. If she hadn't been there to calm and lead the others, they would have panicked and scattered. Our sassy little heifer kept the herd together and likely saved many of their lives. Next, from John Kelly in the Washington Post, here's Milo. A trapped neighbor was afraid no one would hear her cries for help. Milo did. Milo is a rescue dog, adopted by 20-year-old Michaela Swift. But the beagle is also a rescuer. One morning in November 2021, Swift opened up her front door in Silver Spring, Maryland, and Milo took off running. Milo ran to the house across the street. He seemed unsatisfied with this house, so he ran to the one next door, Swift on his tail. He started scratching on the front door, Swift says. I'm thinking, why is he literally trying to break into her house? She was embarrassed. Not everyone wants a strange dog on their property. But as he tried to drag Milo away, she could hear a sound coming through an open upstairs window. It was a voice yelling, "Help!" Hours earlier, around 4 a.m., Sherry Starr had risen from her bed. All of a sudden, standing there between the toilet and the tub, "I slipped," she says. "I went down, hard, on the tile floor." Starr is 85 years old. She was stuck. "I could not move at all," says Starr, who was wedged between the toilet and the tub. Starr was scared. "I'm thinking I'm just going to die here," she says. Her best bet, she decided, was to listen for the letter carrier in the afternoon and scream like the dickens. For the next few hours, Starr practiced yelling, "Help! Help! Help!" Her voice was very faint, says Swift. You had to be right at the front door to hear Mrs. Starr yell for help. Unless you were Milo the Beagle, who apparently heard Starr the instant Swift opened her front door. Swift called 911. Paramedics thought they'd have to remove the toilet to dislodge Starr, but they gave her one last pull, and out she popped. Though bruised and battered, Starr declined a trip to the hospital. Swift has known her share of distress. 2 years ago, her mother died. She says Milo has helped her with the grief. "That dog is a blessing," she says. From Derek Burnett of Reader's Digest, here's Charlie. A family of ducklings was stranded. He saved them all. Jorge Serrano and his dog Charlie were strolling through a park in Cornelius, North Carolina, when they heard a commotion near the pond. It was a duck, sounding distress quacks from an overflow drain in the center of the water. Across the street, about 150 feet away, a small crowd had gathered at the drain's exit. Five ducklings had swum too close and had been sucked in by the drain's current. You could hear their frantic peeps from the pipe's mouth. The pipe was less than 2 feet in diameter. Serrano would never fit. But Charlie? "He'll do anything you ask him to," says Serrano. "He'll deliver newspapers when he walks by somebody's house. Or he'll carry flowers to somebody if you ask him to do it." Charlie peered into the pipe, listening intently. "Go get the duckies," Serrano said. The tunnel was dark, dirty, and scary. Charlie took a few steps into the unknown. He turned back with a look that said, "Just what are you asking me to do here?" "Go in and get the duckies," Serrano repeated. Charlie faded out of sight, returning a few seconds later with a muddy stick covered in cobwebs. He handed it hopefully to Serrano. "Duckies," said Serrano. This time, the message went through. Charlie strode into the cold, dark pipe. His footfalls faded. Serrano got nervous. What if Charlie got lost or stuck? But the flat-coated retriever did what he does best. Retrieved. Minutes later, he emerged, gently holding a duckling in his mouth. Serrano applauded him, then sent him back in. 5 times, Charlie ventured into the tunnel, carrying the ducklings out one by one. Cheering onlookers reunited the baby ducks with their mother. I'd like to take credit for training him, but really, he's just a smart guy that wants to please, says Serrano. Talk about some lucky ducks. Now some more Your True Stories, 3 in a row here. First, from Vicki Avester of Jerseyville, Illinois. Curly and Candy. Our Bichon Frises, Candy and Curly, are both rescues. We got Curly first, and he taught Candy everything. How to walk on grass, use the doggy door, interact with humans. One stormy morning, I put Curly in his thunder shirt and then went to work. Candy bothered my husband until he came into the next room. Curly was stuck to the floor, with the Velcro from his thunder shirt attached to the carpet. We still laugh about what Curly must have thought as his loving mom stepped over him. And little hero girl Candy was so excited to do something for Curly. From Jean Brown in Kannapolis, North Carolina. Hobbit the Hotel Cat. I used to work the graveyard shift at a hotel, and a stray cat would wander into the lobby, watch TV, and spend the night with me. Eventually, I took her home and named her Hobbit. While I was sleeping after a night shift, Hobbit yowled and nipped at me until I woke up. I smelled smoke. Firefighters pulling smoldering furniture from a downstairs apartment told me I didn't need to evacuate. The fire was contained, but Hobbit wouldn't settle down until the smoke cleared. From then on, I slept easy, knowing I had a friend on permanent safety patrol. And from Maria Witset of Marble Falls, Texas, here's Oscar and the Scorpion. The rescue folks told us that our cat Oscar's litter had been hunted by coyotes. He was a survivor. Years later, I was in my chair and the typically laid-back, lazy Oscar bolted for my feet. He was swatting with a speed and fierceness I'd never seen from him. Then I saw a healthy-sized scorpion crawling around my feet. I guess those survival instincts are still intact. Here's another story from Bill Hangley Jr. Joey, police report pet squirrel goes nuts on burglar. Joey isn't your typical guard pet. He's not a hulking German shepherd or brawny Doberman pincher. He's a squirrel, a rodent, but he's certainly no pest unless you try to break into his house. Then he's a world of trouble. Adam Pearl found a baby squirrel orphaned in his yard in Meridian, Idaho. He decided to take him in and named him Joey. Pearl set an alarm to bottle feed Joey every 2 hours. Joey learned to use the litter box and graduated to a diet of nuts and greens. In just a few months, he became a fixture in the house. He'd let anybody pet him, says Pearl, right up until the kid broke in. That was the day Pearl came home to obvious signs of a robbery. Strange, snowy footprints tracked around the yard. His gun safe was scratched up. A few items of value were missing. He alerted police about the break-in, and Officer Ashley Turner came to the residence to make a report. Joey had run in the bedroom, and kind of startled her, says Pearl. Turner asked if Joey bites. Usually not, Pearl explained, but he is, after all, a wild animal. You never know. Hours later, Turner returned with a remarkable story. She'd identified a suspect, based in part on the suspicious scratches all over his hands. She asked him, "Did you get that from the squirrel?" He says, "Yeah, it kept attacking me and wouldn't stop until I left," says Pearl. The attack scared him, obviously, because he wasn't expecting to have a squirrel come flying out of nowhere at him, says Turner. So basically, he said he took what he could and left as fast as he could. The Pearls got their stuff back, and Joey got his favorite treat, Whoppers. That spring, Pearl noticed Joey's growing desire to return to nature. Joey became increasingly interested in the windows, and he even began playing with other squirrels through the sliding door. Pearl installed a cat door for Joey to come and go. When the sun would come up, he would go outside and play, and then when the sun went down, he would come back in and climb up in his hammock and go to bed, says Pearl, laughing. After a few weeks of hybrid living, Joey made his permanent return to the wild. He was up in the apple tree and climbed down to my shoulder, and I gave him a nut and scratched his ears. Then he hopped back up in the apple tree and was gone, says Pearl. He didn't come back home that night, so I think that was a kind of his last little bye. And the last amazing rescue tale of Hero Pets and Reader's Digest is a true story from Wesley Chapel, Florida. Eileen Halson writes, "Mandy the Lifeguard. I have multiple sclerosis and use a wheelchair. One day, I fell into the pool, wheelchair and all. Our dog Mandy went berserk, barking and sprinting around the pool edge. She got the attention of my husband and a neighbor, who both rushed out. But by that time, Mandy had already leaped into the pool to try to rescue me herself." Next from Reader's Digest, a classic from January 1991. Condensed from guideposts, here's Sharon Linnea with People Will Surprise You. She came into my life one autumn day in 1976 on a number 3 bus that rumbled down New York's Fifth Avenue. As the bus stopped at 12th Street, an elderly passenger was having trouble negotiating the last long step to the ground. A voice right behind me barked, "Young man, this is a kneeling bus. Would you be kind enough to let it kneel?" The driver, put out, lowered the bus step. I had to smile. The sturdy voice behind me belonged to a woman who herself would not see 80 again. I ran into her again one Friday in an 8th Street deli. Her eyesight was poor, and she was having trouble counting change to pay for her purchase. "Here, ma'am, this is what you need," I said, laying out the quarters. She thanked me and was off. Next time I saw her, she was struggling with a large package. I offered to help. As we walked, I discovered that her name was Laura and that her apartment was only 2 blocks from my college dormitory in Greenwich Village. In the next weeks and months, I kept running into her, and a crazy quilt kind of relationship began to form through odd meetings and patches of conversation. Eventually, we met for dinner at a restaurant. She seemed interested in my plans to be a writer. I felt I'd done a lonely old lady a good turn. Then one winter day, Laura invited me up to her small, homey apartment, crammed with books from which old newspaper clippings were forever escaping, and boxes of letters. She'd brought up her mail, and she handed me a poetry magazine. "I can't quite read it," she said. "Have I anything in this one?" "Laura? A poet?" I looked at the brown cover, and there was her name. "Why, yes, you do," I said. "I let the trees know I was there." A smile crossed her face as she recited the entire poem from memory. My amazement had just begun. As I took the magazine to the shelf, I saw a copy of King David by American writer Stephen Vincent Benet. The gold-embossed volume, inscribed by Benet to his parents, was the first to roll off the presses back in 1923. "Laura," I asked, "how did you come by this?" She answered simply, "Why, Tibby was my baby brother." Laura was Stephen Vincent Benet's older sister. She'd just turned 92. Sensing my astonishment, Laura looked at me with eyes that danced merrily. "My dear," she said, "you must always give people room to surprise you. If you don't, they'll probably act like the boring people you expect them to be. You must give God room to surprise you, too." Although her body was failing, Laura had plenty of pluck. She'd sometimes call at inopportune times, an edge of panic in her voice. "There's a bill here I can't quite read. It seems important. What am I to do?" "Oh, Laura," I'd sigh, seeing my Saturday afternoon slip away. But I'd go over to read the mail to her and to put her bills and checks in order. We'd start to talk, and Laura would surprise me again. How much those eyes, glossy now with cataracts, had seen! She wove wonderful stories of people and places and times I never knew. I began to learn more about the literacy world from this woman with soft braided hair and quote-unquote proper hats than from any professor. 60 years ago, the Benets were one of America's foremost literary families. Laura herself had more than 20 books to her name, biographies, children's books, poems. She'd also trained as a social worker in the early 1900s, putting in selfless years at Manhattan's Spring Street Settlement House. "God takes care of us," she'd tell me, "and he expects us to take care of one another." Like any beginning writer, I was afraid of failure. "Oh, Laura," I'd complain, "a playwright from my home state is famous. He's in all the papers. I'll never amount to anything." "Dear," she said sharply, "you've got to decide. Do you want to be a writer or a celebrity? They're very different things. Take Scott Fitzgerald. He was a good writer when he put his mind to it. But when he was busy being a celebrity, he was the silliest man I ever saw." What God asks of us is to be craftsmen, investing our talents, returning to the same tasks day after day, always trying a little harder, in our work and in our lives. One Sunday, I went to Laura's church to pick her up after the service. but she wasn't there. Concerned, I rushed to her building. My fears were well-founded. Laura had had a heart attack alone in her room the night before. She had fallen and broken her hip. Unable to crawl to the phone, she had lain on the floor all night long. "We found her this morning," the building manager said. "She's in the hospital now." I ran to St. Vincent's Hospital. When the admitting nurse asked, "Are you family?" I said yes, without thinking twice. In the cardiac unit's intensive care wing, I took Laura's hand and said, "Laura, I love you." Laura wasn't able to return to her apartment. She moved into a nursing home in the neighborhood. She missed being on her own, but did her best to accept the help she now needed. One Saturday, a short time later, I met a friend for lunch. Suddenly, without knowing why, I pushed my chair back from my half-eaten sandwich and stood up. "It's great seeing you," I said, "but I have to go." My friend couldn't have been more surprised than I was as I put on my coat, left money for the check, and hurried home into the streets. At the nursing home, I took the steps by twos. When I reached Laura's room, I knew why I had been, quote-unquote, sent for. Laura was breathing with the help of an oxygen mask. The nurse by the bed motioned for me to come close. "I love you, Laura," I whispered. My fingers brushed silky gray hair from her forehead as those wise eyes closed for the last time. Holding her still warm hand, I heard the nurse beside me softly quoting the 23rd Psalm. We finished the verses together. I didn't want to leave, yet as I stood on the steps looking over the square, the hurrying people, the honking traffic, something started to change. I suddenly saw before me the world as Laura had seen it every day of her 94 years, a world of wonder, poetry, angels, a world in which one's life could change on a number 3 bus traveling down Fifth Avenue. I started down the steps, not knowing what surprises lay ahead. But thanks to Laura, I knew I would be ready. And finally in Reader's Digest, food for thought. This from Emily Tyra. Here's Pepita's Pack-a-Punch. It's full-on pumpkin season, and lately it seems it's raining pumpkin seeds, a.k.a. Pepitas. You'll find the tasty kernels stirred into granola, studding a slice of coffeehouse pumpkin bread, or popping up in beet salads, grain bowls, and more. But are the seeds you scoop out of your Halloween jack-o'-lantern and pepitas the same thing? Not exactly. If you husked the tough outer shell of a regular white pumpkin seed, you'd end up with a little green seed. That's a pepita. Gratefully, there's no need for this task. Pepitas are harvested from specific hullless pumpkin varieties with fun names such as Naked Bear and Lady Godiva. Long a staple in Latin groceries and a snack darling at health food stores, pepitas can now be found in the supermarket aisle with nuts and other seeds. They're small but mighty powerhouses of nutrition, says Wendy Jo Peterson, a San Diego-based registered dietitian. They're bursting with magnesium, fiber, protein, zinc, and healthy fats. They're also stout in antioxidants and lignans, holding promise as an anti-cancer seed. Chefs adore these green gems for their smooth, mildly nutty flavor. James Beard Award-winning chef Sarah Greenberg includes pepitas in her new cookbook, Listen to Your Vegetables. It's not often you get two totally different tastes and textures from one vegetable, she notes. I also keep a batch of toasted pepitas in the pantry for quick and easy ways to add flavor, texture, and spice to grilled and roasted veggies, she says. Greenberg toasts a blend of pepitas and sunflower seeds with cumin, coriander, fennel, and sesame seeds. Pepitas switch to the sweeter side, too, as in Chef Rick Bayless's Pepita Mexican Chocolate Cake. Garnish dips or adorn a cheese ball. Add to bran or cranberry muffins. Coat oven-fried chicken or crust a rack of lamb. Sprinkle over whipped cream-topped pumpkin pie or freshly frosted pumpkin spice cookies. You have been listening to Reader's Digest on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program is replayed after 9 o'clock in the evening. This is John Fisher saying goodbye from Owl Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center in San Antonio.